So we want to start out with present moment awareness, sati. It's very important in this kind of in any kind of meditation. Sati. We start out with that, and it grows and grows and grows. And then I'm going to skip over some steps, and we get to what's called samadhi, or deep meditation, deep stillness meditation, where if we're going to have insights, that's where we have them. And the insights lead to, finally, to enlightenment. So that's why we're doing this. And at the end of these steps, maybe I'll go through them again, we have equanimity as the last step. And I'll get back to that later. So we start out with present moment awareness. And we have to have in our meditation a meditation object. And I'm making this quick. What we do at Bodhinyana and what we do in Theravada in general is breath meditation. Not every group. Some do meditations on the body and so on. But in this particular monastery, we concentrate on breath meditation, the in and out breath, which was the Buddha's favorite subject for meditation, although many of the monks that he had did other kinds of meditation too. Metta is a certain kind of meditation, in fact. But in and out breath, breathing, is the one that leads to the deepest states, etc. So what we're doing is simply watching our ordinary, everyday in and out breath. It's not yogic breathing, and we do not manipulate the breath. We don't work on it real hard and make it real big or real small or anything. All we're doing is standing aside and watching it. And that may sound incredibly boring, but this is the subject that leads us to the deepest stillness meditation. And so if you just watch your breath, your breathing now, usually we breathe unconsciously, right? So this is conscious breathing. We're going to be aware of our breathing as it goes in and out. Now, in the long run, it's impossible, especially for beginners, especially for me, to keep your mind on it for a long period of time without your mind going off and talking. And the inner talk starts thinking about the past and the future. Let those drop. This is in general. You'll have to come back to this over and over. Let them drop and go back to your breath. And it's just like a guy or woman exercising their arms. You know, they have to pump iron. Every time you come back to your breath, it's like pumping iron. And you come back to it over and over, and you build those meditation muscles. So that mindfulness. So what I call present moment awareness, which people call mindfulness, keeps you on the track and says, hey, you're talking now, go back to your breathing. And you see that you're talking, and without aversion to it, you simply see it and you go back to your breathing and stay on the point, which is the breath. Now, this is difficult. This is not an easy subject. But one way you can win this is by having an intention before each in-breath, inhale, and before each exhale, you have a separate intention. I am going to watch. You don't say this to yourself, but you have the intention, and it has to be quick, that you're going to watch this from beginning to end. You're going to have the intention that you're going to be mindful and watch this breath and nothing else from the beginning of the breath to its end, and then you have another intention, I'm going to watch the exhale from the beginning and end. Now, this is all drawn out very long in words to explain it, and of course it has to be very quick in your mind. You have to make that, but you can make the intention if you're mindful, and you will win. You will be able to win many of these. Some you'll still get off the track and start thinking about one thing or another, but you'll be able to win some. You'll be able to see the breath going in and without manipulating. And if you manipulate it, then you have to see that and see how you, like everybody else, wants to control things. But you just let it go, and in time, things get easier. Yeah, everybody has to climb the same mountain as far as meditation goes, right? Everybody has to go through the same difficulties and so on. And this is why it's called a practice. You have to practice it. And you have to be determined and you have to be persistent. So you breathe in intending, and then you breathe out with that intention of watching it. Is everybody clear on what I mean?
Yes.
Okay. Because there's no way I can show you. I can only breathe. There's no way I can show you what's in my mind. I can only say intend, first in and then out. Okay. So that's what the meditation is. And as I say, you have to keep coming back to it. And in the guided meditation of that part of it, of this meditation, I'll periodically tell you, come back. If you've slipped off the track, come back to the breath. Keep coming back to the breath over and over. And as you do this, the more you do it, the more stillness will build up, the more you'll stay away from your thoughts, and the more peace you'll have. Now, an important thing to do physically is to sit up straight. I don't know how many people here meditate on the floor, sitting on the floor. That's the standard method. And but if you're sitting in a seat, or if you're sitting on a floor, you want to sit up straight with your back straight as possible, and keep your head balanced up on top. And you try to keep the small of your back tucked in, and that will prevent back aches, and it will also keep you more awake. Because when you start to slump and your head starts going down, you know you're headed towards a dull state, and that eventually leads to sleep, a sleepy state. So now in terms of pain, if you start to have pain, see the pain and see that if you take your mind, you see it and then take your mind, put it back on your breath, you see if the pain goes away. If it really doesn't and you have to move, then move, but otherwise attempt not to make movements. This will drain your energy, and this kind of restlessness is one of the hindrances you don't want. It will hinder your meditation. You want to keep as still as possible. And I won't say ignore the pain. If the pain is excruciating, then you'll have to change posture. Especially if you're sitting on the floor at some time in the future. Is everybody clear on the instructions? Do I need to go into it more? Does everybody know what to do now if we start a meditation? Now, this is a little awkward, but I want to start with a loving kindness meditation because it has to do with the talk. Usually, you do loving kindness at the beginning of your meditation. I don't have to. I mean, if people think it's a little awkward, too awkward, and they want to do it at the end of the meditation because they want to start breathing. I mean, they want to watch their breathing. But usually, you start your loving kindness meditation right at the start. So, if you
are we doing both?
Yes, I was going to do. No, not at the same time. No, on the loving kindness meditation, I'll tell you what it is briefly. I mean, you don't need to watch your breath. Let me see. You can watch. I take it back. You can watch your breath at the same time, because what we're doing is we're going to spread loving kindness for certain individuals. This is one of the different forms. So the first person you always do metta is loving kindness, if I say that. Metta, you always do it for yourself first. It's very important to do metta for yourself first. If you don't have metta for yourself, you won't be able to spread metta for other people either.
Thank you.
Yeah. And... So we start with yourself, and I'll give the words later, but on the words, you can do them with the breath. You can sync up the words in your mind. For instance, may I be happy. You can sync that up with your breath. May I be happy like that. And that's a way of watching the breath. It's not the usual way, but that's a way of doing it. Usually we do metta with the breath in that way. Okay? Everybody clear? And then, okay, the next person after yourself is what's called a mentor. That's somebody you revere. You don't have to know them personally, but it's somebody like Ajahn Brahm or Dalai Lama or somebody who you think is a really wonderful person who has influenced you, or you see what I mean, right? Somebody, a great person. Maybe somebody you know. Maybe it's a teacher. It doesn't have to be somebody like the Dalai Lama. It could be one of your teachers. Somebody who has influenced you. Okay, the next person is a good friend. A good friend. Now, you don't want to have somebody who you're in a sexual relationship with, so it's not your girlfriend, boyfriend, or husband or wife. And usually they exclude family members, but a friend. The next person is what we call a neutral person. Somebody you know, you've seen them, you may pass them in the hall every day, you know, at work. But you haven't really developed any feelings one way or the other for. You're not a friend of theirs. You're not an enemy of theirs. They're just a person, and you know about them, but you've never really maybe even spoken to them except maybe hello or something. Maybe they live in your apartment building or something. And so that's the next person. And the last person, as an individual, will do is the enemy. Or the adversary, if you have any. This is a difficult person, a person you would rather not think about, maybe. A person you get into trouble with. You get into dislike, you know, and all sorts of negative states. That's the last person because it's the most difficult. And then we'll probably go on and do may all beings at the end. All right, is everyone clear on that? Yes.
Did all those categories exclude family members?
Usually, yes. I've always seen them that way, yes. The metta is non-personal love. It's love for everyone equally. There are better words, and I can't think of them right now, but it's equanimous love, or it's love that can go to anyone, whether they're rich or poor, whether they're enemies or friends. It's pure love that's not particular, and it's not selfish, and it doesn't expect anything back. Nothing at all. So we can start the meditation. So if we had the lights off, we'll start with this. I have to keep track of the time or I'll run too long. And somewhere after that, and I assume there'll be time, we'll go into the breathing meditation, and I'll signal that when we do that. So, everybody take a deep breath. Now, with your breath, direct your metta, your loving kindness to yourself with the words, "May I be happy." And you sync it up any way you can with your breathing. May I be happy. That's all there is to it. There are other words that we could use. I could read from a long script, but this is the way I do it, and I recommend just this simple wishing yourself happiness. May I be happy. And some people may find this difficult. Do your best. May I be happy. And now, I won't interrupt. I'll just let you do this until the next person. Now we'll go on to the next person. This can go on as long as you want, but we want to get through all. And the next person is the mentor, somebody you revere and think very highly of, somebody who has helped you. So, and you can supply the name, may such and such be happy. And you can vary it, you can say, may this person be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to this person. May he always meet with success. Whatever words you want to use, you link them up with your breathing. May such and such be happy. Visualize this person looking at you and smiling, and you can imagine yourself smiling back and wishing this person the greatest happiness, pure metta, pure loving kindness, not expecting anything back from them. May this person be happy. Now we'll go on to the friend. Someone you like, you have a good relationship with. The same, you can visualize this person smiling at you and you smiling back. May this person be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to this person. May this person be free from all suffering. May this person be happy. With the breath, in and out, may such and such be happy. Okay, now we'll go on to the neutral person, the person you don't have any particular feelings for one way or the other. Someone you see and once in a while, but you don't really know and you'd never had much of a conversation with. And you can imagine them smiling and, may this person be happy. And may no harm come to this person. May this person always meet with success. May such and such be happy. Now we'll turn to the adversary or the enemy. If you don't have any personal enemies, you're lucky, and so you might take somebody from the news who you have negative feelings towards. It could be a politician or somebody like that. And you can see that person, and you smile at this person, and you see them smiling back. And you want to break through. You want to break through animosity and have loving kindness for this person now. And if this is practiced, this will affect your life, or this relationship at least. And so may this person be happy. May this person be happy. May this person be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to him or her. May he always meet with spiritual success. May he or she be happy. We'll go to all beings everywhere. Simply, may all beings be happy. May all beings in the universe be happy. May all beings on the earth, above and below, whatever kind of beings they may be, spiritual or human beings or beings in the ghost realm, whatever realm they're in, may all these beings be happy. May all beings be happy. beings be happy. And now we'll conclude this metta meditation, and we'll go on to the breath meditation, watching your breath. You're already breathing, so just step aside from your breath. Don't try to control it. Determine one in-breath and after the in-breath, determine one exhalation, and really see those one after another. Keep your awareness in the present moment. Remember, you can only breathe in the present moment. You can't breathe in the past. So don't think about the past, and don't think about the future. You can't breathe in the future. All your breath takes place now, right in the present moment. Keep your mindfulness, your present moment awareness, right here and now in the present moment as you're breathing. Keep your body relaxed. If any tension develops in any places, like your face, your neck, your shoulders, just let the tension flow out through your hands. And if it develops in your stomach, any the lower parts of your body, just let it flow out through the feet. Just let a plane go from the top of your head through your body, down through your chest, your torso, down through your legs, pushing out all the tension out your feet. Just let all the tension go. And then watch your breath. Relaxed. if you've slipped off, see the thoughts and return to the breathing. Each in-breath is precious, bringing this precious life energy into the body. We're usually unconscious of it, but now is our chance to breathe consciously and breathe that energy in and let the residue flow out. One breath at a time. One in breath and then one out breath. In breath and then out breath. Single pointed awareness and attention to the breathing. This is all it is. If you hear sounds or any other kinds of disturbances, physical, mental, just see them and return to the breath. Don't fight them, don't push them away, just acknowledge them like clouds floating by in the sky. Just let them come. Whatever comes, let it come. Whatever goes, just let it go. Don't hold on to anything, don't push anything away. Neither desire or aversion to any of the thoughts or to even a pain in your knee. Just let it go, drop it, return to the breathing. Return to the breath that you've slipped off. A new resolve, a new in-breath. Every in-breath carries this energy, a special energy. You can visualize the energy any way you want, as golden light flowing in into your body. Golden light flowing in, flowing out. Conscious breathing. Now, soon we'll come to the end of this meditation. So when the lights come on, just slowly open your eyes and get used to the light. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. May all beings, wherever they are, be well, happy, and peaceful. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. No harm come to me. May no harm come to me. May I always meet with success. May all my suffering cease. May I be happy. And so we'll end this meditation now, and the lights can come on. So may all the beings in this room be happy. So if anybody has questions, I invite questions, comments, reactions, anything that wasn't clear, any wonderful successes. Yes, questions.
I want to just say that I had a peaceful bit of meditation in spite of a crushing headache. Mm-hmm. It was still helpful.
And you still had the headache?
Yes, but it changed in intensity. Mm-hmm. But I've still enjoyed the benefits of some meditation mm-hmm. in spite of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Glad to hear that.
Thank you, sir.
And proof.
Proof.
It works. I consider loving kindness meditation the most important. There are four Brahma Viharas, and it's the first, and it's the one I encourage you to practice the most. And would suggest, if you can, in the morning and in the evening before going to bed. It will change your day. It will change your life. It will purify your mind. I also suggest always doing metta, a little bit of metta. When you're going to meditate and do, say, breath meditation, do the metta first, or whatever meditation you usually do. Do the metta meditation, loving kindness meditation, a little bit first. It cleanses the mind, purifies the mind.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Why would you combine it with breath? Why not do the whole meditation on metta rather than switching from one to the other?
Oh, that's only because of this class. I wouldn't usually. But I wanted to do some breath meditation because that's the instructions I gave. The instructions I gave were on breath meditation. So I felt that if I left that out, how could I leave it out? I have to do it.
Oh.
Right?
So you would normally do just metta or just breath?
Well,
it just seems so rushed on all that we were moving so quickly through the day.
Yes, well, I thought that was the best way to do it. Maybe that wasn't the best way to do it.
No, I'm just asking.
That's why, because I wanted to do some breath meditation, pure breath meditation, because that's what we usually do here. But I also wanted to give an introduction to loving kindness meditation because I'm going to talk about the Brahma Viharas, and I wanted an introduction to it. And I can, as I said, I consider it the most important one anyway, so I wanted everybody to know it. So, you see what I mean? I hope that was all right.
So next time when you come, can we just do a metta without the breath? Because we
without
don't have
breath.
To do breath here at all.
Oh.
No, we do lots of different things.
I see. Well,
no, I was just, you know, but maybe you always do.
I guess I would feel remiss if I didn't do breath meditation. But no, I'm glad you said that. I didn't even think of it. I just thought that I would have to, de rigueur, you know, I would have to do breath meditation.
No.
Okay. Well, anyway, we did both.
Oh, yeah. Two for the price of one.
So that's a little bit of metta and a little bit of breath meditation. I hope it wasn't too rushed for everybody and they still got some peace. And
I love the breath meditation.
I'm sorry?
I love the breath meditation.
Good.
Mm. And I just wanted to say thank you because I hadn't done the metta before.
Oh, good.
So I'm a mindfulness meditator.
Mm-hmm.
And it was challenging for me because I've come a long way.
Oh.
But I found this was one of my better sessions. I wish I could have gone longer, actually.
Oh, well, I could have, but
yeah,
I think Rachel would throw me out. I'd ask everybody to do me a favor and to speak very loud because I am slightly hard of hearing, and or maybe more than slightly, and I have a lot of trouble with hearing people unless they speak up. Yes. Oh, hello.
So when we go and practice metta on our own, should we move through all the different people that you listed, or should we stay with ourselves until we get the metta feeling arising?
That's an excellent question. If you want to do metta just for yourself, especially if you're new to it, fine. That's great. You don't have to do the others. It's a form. There are several different forms. of doing it. One is the different people that I mentioned. That's the sort of like the traditional form. Another traditional form, just to be quick, is extension, where geographically, you might say. You start with a little geography like the room, and then you go out maybe to the block, and then you go out maybe to all of Perth, and then you go to WA, maybe, and then all of Australia, and then all of the Southern Hemisphere, and then all of the Earth, and then all of the solar system. You make this up for yourself. You get the idea, right? The solar system, this section of the universe, the whole Milky Way, and then the whole starry world. The whole world. So it's extension out. That's another way. Another way they do it is the eight directions. Mm-hmm. They do, well, you'd have to say, so, you know, basically, you'd have to start, you could start northeast, east, southeast, southwest, south. I'm doing it wrong. I think I'm doing it wrong. South, that was east. Southwest, west, north. You get it, right? Don't make me do this. And then the other two, that's a certain number. And then there's up, up, and down. All up and all down. So that's the other way of doing, that's a kind of extension also. I don't know if you really wanted to know that, but I felt I needed to complete it. But I say, if you're new to it, the best thing you can do is doing metta for yourself and getting that feeling. And if you don't have the feeling, okay, just do the words at first. It is a feeling, but what if you don't have the feeling? You have to do the words. And I'll use my favorite simile. You know those old pumps, those iron pumps on the farms, the ranches? You know, if you go out and you want to get water and you start pumping, you're not going to get water right away, right? Unless somebody else has been using it. Okay, well, you're not going to necessarily get a feeling of metta right away if you're cold, if you're new to it. That's not so easy. But you do the words, you're pumping. You keep pumping, and then eventually the water starts coming out, right? And then eventually it starts gushing out. And then you only have to move the handle a little bit. And the metta's there, the feeling's there, but you only have to say just a little bit of words. Hardly any, and maybe you can leave the words behind. That would be the ultimate, you know. Just to have the feeling and just have the water gushing out, have the metta gushing out. So that's the goal, right? So, fine. And if you want to try the other people too, especially if you're, say, you're having problems with someone, then you can, it's a good thing to do. Okay. Anybody else? Yes. Yes. Okay.
I was just going to say, when you're talking about the categories of beings.
Yes.
I elected people who weren't alive.
Oh no, you're not supposed to do that.
But
I'm sorry.
But you kind of made me feel better because you're talking about the spiritual realm as well.
Well, yes, living beings.
I didn't make a decision.
I forgot. Living beings are supposed to be the direction.
That's nice benefit.
Why that is, I won't even. I don't know. I mean, those are the directions from everyone, every teacher, every commentary that I've ever seen. So, I don't know. But yeah, I would restrict it to living beings.
It wasn't deliberate.
No, fine. I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot. Did you want to ask something?
Sorry, I thought it was the same question. Mine's a bit different. So,
loud?
Before the meditation, you were talking about five stages.
Oh, yes.
One of which was enlightenment, and the last one, I'm not going to try.
Not enlightenment, but yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
The last one I'm going to try and pronounce, but you said you'd get
to
it later.
Oh, you want me to talk about that? No? The seven factors of enlightenment? The only reason I wanted to talk about the seven factors of enlightenment was because you've got sati, or awareness, at the beginning. And then you've got, over here, you've got, I'm not sure which one, I have to count them. You've got samadhi, or deep meditation. It's stillness meditation where you get insights. Oh, that's when I said enlightenment. that's how you get the enlightenment, but it comes much, you know, down the road. And then at the end is equanimity, which is the fourth Brahma Vihara, and the highest equanimity. All right.
And what is that?
Is that enough?
I don't know what the word equanimity is.
Equanimity, a balanced state of mind, and we'll get to that later because we're going to talk about that later. A balanced state of mind in which you're neither pushed nor pulled by anything in our life, neither desires nor aversions, and we don't have preferences. We don't have preferences, and it is not the same as indifference. But we'll get to that later.
Thank you.
Okay. So I can start. I've said my piece about encouraging you to do metta meditation. If you got one thing from the whole night and you started doing metta meditation, I'd feel incredibly successful. I mean, I wouldn't, not me, but, you know, our work. Shall I say the work would be successful, but I'd be happy that you connected with that idea, that one idea, just do metta. So but I want to talk about all the Brahma Viharas because I have to give a talk. So okay, these are called the Brahma Viharas. Brahma is the gods. Vihara means dwelling. These are called that because these are like among the highest states that a human being can reach. And so getting there, even a little bit of metta, how did the Buddha put it? He said if you have 1 second or one a minute part of time, like a minute, if you have 1 minute of pure metta, it's worth several lifetimes of simple practice. Or something. I'm sorry, I don't know the exact words. I should come more equipped. But that's the point, is that it's so precious and so pure that it's worth everything else. So, the first one we have to... I'll just name them, first of all. We have loving-kindness, metta. Then we have compassion, karuna. Compassion. And then we have what's called sympathetic joy, which I'll have to explain what that means. It means, as a reflection of somebody else's joy, I have joy. It doesn't mean that I offer joy to somebody else or extend joy. It does not mean that. That's how some people practice it. It means because of somebody else's joy, without my saying anything to them, they don't even know me, I have joy in myself. Okay, that's what that means. And then the last is equanimity, which is a pure, balanced state. It is not indifference. That equanimity would have all the three other Brahma Viharas that I just mentioned with it. They're all combined together. It would have compassion and loving kindness and sympathetic joy, all there. There's just as much compassion. But that individual who might be an arhat, in other words, a fully enlightened being, to really practice equanimity, he's not swayed, and he doesn't have preferences. It might be what we consider a bad man, it might be a good man, but they get equal treatment. Okay? That's a simple explanation. So I'll start out with loving kindness. There's a simile that is in the commentary, and also Bhante Gunaratana, who's a metta master, uses. You can imagine this like a metaphor of a mother, and she has a baby in her womb, and she has this pure love for this baby. She doesn't expect anything from it, and she gives birth, and her love, no matter how much trouble the baby gives her, and you can imagine if you've ever been around babies, you can see, and that she has the purest love for this baby and doesn't expect the baby anything from the baby. She just has the purest, purest love for it. And this is not selfish love. Okay? Okay, then she has a child, and the child is grown up and is walking, but is stumbling maybe and falls down and hurts his knee, and or gets a cut, or gets in a fight and gets hurt, and she has compassion for him. And compassion does not mean that she takes on his suffering. That's not what compassion means. Compassion means that she or I wish that the suffering of that person be relieved, that it disappear, that it go away, that person no longer has suffering or pain. May that person's pain go away. It doesn't mean that she or whoever it is taking on the grief and suffering of some other person. That is not compassion. That's just a low emotion, a very bad emotion, in the sense that it drags you down spiritually. Okay, that's compassion. She has just compassion. She wants the child to feel good, right? Okay. Now, there's another form in the commentary where it's a child, but the child is an invalid, and the mother wishes that invalid, that all the pain and suffering and illness of that invalid go away of that child. Okay, that's a different form. That's a little stronger. Then the next one is sympathetic joy. So the mother has an older child, and this child has some successes. You know, the child might be doing well in school and have really good exams, and the child is happy. So she sees that happiness, and because the child is happiness, she's happy. And it's not selfish. It's not because the child did well on the exams and she's going to go tell the neighbors about how, you know, and then feel that she's a great mom because her child. It's not that kind of happiness, right? You get what I'm saying? It's not us. There's no selfishness in it. In fact, she wouldn't necessarily communicate it to anybody. In fact, he may do really well in footy. You know, in football, his team may be great, and he may make a lot of scores, and she may hate football. You know, just as a matter of fact, she doesn't have any sympathy for football itself. But because the child is happy, she sees the happiness, and she becomes happy as a reflection of that happiness in herself, and that makes her life better. That kind of happiness. Okay, then the next one is equanimity. Okay, so the child has grown up and is married and has a job and is living their own life. And the words that are given are, you know what, all know what karma or kama is, more or less, right? This person owns, she thinks to herself, this is what goes on. This person is the owner of his or her own karma. All that's good or bad in their life comes to them as a result of their actions, not from my wishes. Not as a result of my wishes. I am no longer in control. However, that does not mean she doesn't have compassion. It simply means it's an acknowledgement of the state. Another way to put it that I like is, you think of a doctor, a physician. They have what I would consider a very narrow degree, but a great degree of equanimity. I call it professional equanimity. They have to be equanimous when they're doing surgery or treating a patient, because that's why they don't. It's not considered professional for a doctor to treat members of their own family, because they may get into an emotional kind of conflict about it. So they have equanimity, and the person may be suffering, and they may have compassion. Lots of people who become physicians have compassion and do it for other things besides money, right? Let's hope. But they have compassion, they have loving kindness, and so on, but when they're performing, they have equanimity about the results and what's going on, so that they can maintain their thought, their thinking, so that their thinking can be clear and not tied up with emotions, with lower emotions, especially grief and that sort of thing, or desire, any kind of desires that they would desire one thing or another. And they have to let it go because they're wise. They have to let the results go. They've done their best, and they don't beat themselves up about it. If they're wise doctors, I mean, the results, they do the best they can. They've done all their whatever is in their training, and the results are up to karma. All right, that's that simile about loving, about the four Brahma Viharas, if you understand. Now, getting on in time. Okay, we start with loving kindness. They like to talk about the far enemy and the near enemy. The far enemy of loving kindness would be hate or aversion. That's kind of obvious. The near enemy is selfish love, what I would call selfish love. In the commentary they call it greed, but it seems to be like loving kindness, because you may love that individual, say, but it's because you want something back. So that's called the near enemy, because it looks like it, but it's not. It's quite different. Is that clear? I don't know if these are going to help, but okay. Now, in compassion, the far enemy of compassion is cruelty. The near enemy is suffering and grief. As I said, suffering and grief, people may say, oh, he's such a compassionate person. Look, he's crying and he's in grief about this or that. Well, that's not compassion. Compassion is having the thoughts that you wish the person to be free from all pain and suffering, and also doing the action. And we'll get back to that. So, in sympathetic joy, the far enemy of sympathetic joy, strangely enough, is called aversion or boredom. But I would make a, that's just commentarial, and I would make a case for envy myself. But I want to explain why they say boredom. So you can imagine a monk in a cave, and he's been meditating in this cave all by himself, and he's really hit a wall, and he's really in the doldrums, and he's so tired of meditating, and he knows he has to keep on. You know, this happens to monks, right? And so what he does, he's very wise. He's a smart monk. He knows about the Brahma Viharas, and he knows about, this is called mudita, this is sympathetic joy. And so he remembers that he has a monk friend who just recently achieved an attainment. Maybe they got a jhana, which is a really deep state, or maybe they reached a certain stage of enlightenment or something like that, or something in their life. And this, the thought of that monk's happiness, about how happy they were, makes him happy and buoys him up, and he overcomes the boredom. And this joy just fills his life. And he can go from one person to another. Anytime he's feeling down, he can think of some other person. And if he can't think of something in their life that that's happening at that time, he could think of something in the past or something that might be happening in the future to them, to that person. Now, it's always particular. It's not people in general that you have this sympathetic joy for or with. You have to pick a particular, this is how it's practiced. You pick a particular person and something that has happened in their life that you know. They may have given birth to a child, a person may have got a promotion or a new job or whatever, you know, you can say your own. But whatever that is can buoy you up and keep you happy if you know how to practice it. But you have to learn how to practice it and not fall into envy and not fall into any kind of emotional state. The near enemy is called merriment, or this is an interpretation of the near enemy is merriment or exuberation, where you see it at a ball game where people are jumping up and down, clapping hands and slapping people on the back, and it's very physical, very, very emotional. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but it's not what we're talking about. It's not sympathetic joy, which is an inner state in the heart, and it's a pure state. These are higher states. This is not jumping up and down. You see what I mean? Okay, so then on equanimity, the far enemy of equanimity is called, this is a little hard to see, it's called greed or resentment, which doesn't, then they don't explain why. To me, the main point is that a person with equanimity does not have preferences. They do not prefer a good thing or a bad thing. They don't have preferences. This is equanimity. It's up here. And the near enemy is a kind of indifference that's based on ignorance. And people, when I've been told this, that people try to teach other people about equanimity, and then I've heard them say, but they don't understand. They still think it's indifference. They don't understand. It still has compassion. It has all the others. But they don't understand. And this indifference, similar, people think that's equanimity, but it's based on ignorance. In other words, the ignorance is that that person doesn't even see, it doesn't even recognize or even know about the good or bad in the things that he's supposedly he's indifferent about. He doesn't know about them. It's ignorance. It's just everyday, average.
That's quite a big deal, isn't it? It's quite a big deal, really, that one.
What, indifference?
It's like poking the bone at one end of the spectrum and couldn't care less at the other end.
Yeah, if I understand what you mean, I think
so. Poking the bone at something,
I think so. It sounds okay. Anyway, so is that clear? If it's not clear, I'll try to clarify, but I want to get to my quick little stories. I have stories now. Is everybody really clear? I mean, if you have a question, say so. I don't want to... yes. Real loud, too.
I also was talking to someone who, I was wishing them happiness who wasn't here anymore. And
dead, you mean? They were dead?
Someone's passed on.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, because I don't know. I can't answer that. Those are the instructions. I don't know exactly why. I know that there was a monk who was trying to practice jhanas, which are a really, really deep state. Have you heard of jhanas? They're a very deep state, and you can use metta and the other three Brahma Viharas to attain different kinds of jhana. The fourth jhana is equanimity. However, he couldn't reach it. He was trying to do metta for his teacher, or a teacher that he had, or someone, and he couldn't reach jhana that he had before. So he went to another teacher, and he said, he told him why, and he said, "Why did this happen?" And he said, "Look into the subject." The subject was that person, right? That was the sub. So he looked into the subject, and the person had died. Now that's the best answer I can give you.
Because that person's in the past.
Is
the person that died is
past. Well, but he wouldn't know that at the time. Oh. I don't know. I can't answer that. It's as far as I can go.
Can you have your stories?
Yes, I have.
Your stories are always brilliant. So, and we know we're running out of time.
Yeah, we're running out of time. Well, okay. The first one is for loving kindness. The best story I know is about Bhante Gunaratana, and I've told this story before. He's very old now, but he still travels. And this is a true story. He was in Heathrow, and he was, as usual, he was sitting up cross-legged on the bench at Heathrow waiting, and he was doing metta meditation, which he often does in airports. Metta meditation, and suddenly he felt around his neck two tiny arms around his neck. He looked down, and it was a little girl, and he recognized this little girl as one who had been carried around before by her mother. when he realized that she had got away from her mother and run over and had grabbed him. How many times do you see a little girl, 2-3 years old, go to a strange person? And he's a little brown man, very dark. And he said, well, maybe she thought I was Santa Claus. I mean, this is why. And he has brown robes. Well, his are redder. Why? And then he says, well, little girl, you have to go to your mother now. She has all your candy and all your toys. I don't have any of those things. Please go to your mother now. You know, and he didn't touch her or anything. You know, she just held on, smiling. And then her mother came over and said, "Oh, please let her go. Please give her a blessing and let her go." And he says, "I'm not holding her." You know, so the mother tries to get her away, and he tells the little girl to go again. Please go. Please be very nice to her. Of course, the mother has to finally drag the little girl, literally kicking and screaming, away from Bhante Ji, and she's, you know, crying and takes her away, and she's looking over the shoulder with her arms out. And so he says, now why did this happen? Okay, I don't know, the Santa Claus, that doesn't seem very likely, but he said, or a past life remembrance? Maybe, but he says, you know, little children, especially that age, you know, like 2 or 3, he didn't even hear her talk. He doesn't even know what language she spoke. Are very sensitive to these, I don't know what to call them except vibrations, you know, these emanations, and negative ones as well, you know, of course. You have to be careful. So, to me, this is the best story about loving kindness. It can affect other people. You don't do it necessarily because it's going to. You don't know whether it will or not. You're doing it to make your life better, as a basis for your own meditation practice and your purification of your mind. So the next story is about compassion. Okay, so this is a story from the scriptures. A rival teacher in the time of the Buddha sent a prince to confront the Buddha with a question and to try to show that he was no better than any other person. Ask the Buddha, he said, ask the Buddha if he ever says anything to people that displease them and make them unhappy, and we'll catch him on the horns of a dilemma, because either he will lie and say no, or he'll say yes, and that will prove that he's just like the rest of everybody else. He's no different from anybody else. So the prince went to see him, and apparently he really did like the Buddha, because he went back the next day to ask the question, and he had his little child on his lap, and he asked the Buddha that question: do you ever say anything that makes people unhappy or displeased? And the Buddha says, well, that can't be answered simply by a yes or no answer. And so the prince tells him, he says, then the Nigantas, that was the group, have failed. And the Buddha asks him why, and he says, because they asked me to do this. He tells him the story, and so the Buddha gives him the answer. He says, what would happen if your little son there, I think it was a little son, put a pebble or a piece of wood in his mouth? And the prince was smart. He said, I would crook my finger and put it into his mouth, and even if it drew blood, I would pull that piece of wood or pebble out. Because why? Because I am compassionate. And I know that he could choke and die. And the Buddha says, well, in the same way, when a monk is in danger, I am compassionate, and I will tell him what he needs to know. Okay? Whether he's displeased or unhappy or not. Okay? This is a new kind of compassion, right? That maybe people who haven't thought about compassion, they don't realize what a compassionate act could be. It could be to save someone's life, spiritually. All right, the next thing is mudita, which is sympathetic joy. This is I'll try to shorten this. This is a long story. This is about the Visakha, who was the foremost lady woman disciple of the Buddha. and she was already a sotapanna, which means she reached the first level of enlightenment, and she was also quite wealthy. And so she had the monks and the Buddha come to a dinner, a dana. And these were a lot of monks, so she put out a lot. And afterwards she said, "Master, I want to ask for 8 boons." You know, boons are favors, but you don't, when they asked boons of kings in the old days, they didn't tell them what it was. And the Buddha said, "Well, the Buddha, the Tathagata, does not grant boons without knowing what they are or why. So what are they and why?" And she names 8 things. God's getting later. But I almost have to say what they are. There, for one thing, this had to do with the rains and the rains bathing cloth. So rains, it's a certain garment that we don't really use now, but rains bathing cloths, and all of these are for life, for all the monks and all the nuns in this area. A meal for every monk who newly comes to the town, so they don't have to search around to get food. And a meal for every monk who is leaving to go on travels, so they don't have to search around. And then a meal for all sick monks, a meal, and a meal for all attendants of the sick, and medicine for the sick, and kanji, which is a rice porridge, and they make very many kinds, and I've had many kinds from Sri Lankans, and they put herbs and things in them, so they have a medicinal, if you know what I mean, medicinal health-giving properties. They're used for health, you know. It's the only kind of food that I ever saw in the scriptures that was extolled by the Buddha. Now, he asked her, here's the point of the whole story. He asked her, "Why do you want to do all these things?" This is all of these things for life. Unbelievable. So she said, "Because when I hear of a monk in this area who has a special attainment or a certain enlightenment or something wonderful happening to them, I will know that this monk partook, it could be a nun too, excuse me, but a monk or nun, that they partook of some of this dana, some of these gifts that I'm putting out, that I will put out, and that will make me happy. And their joy will be reflected in me, and it will be because of these gifts. And this will support my practice." That's the key. This will support my practice. Excuse me for getting emotional. But that's the key to that one. Now, on the next one, equanimity.
Keep going.
Okay, this is a rather. I'll make this story quick, and maybe Ajahn Brahm has told the story about the monk. I think this is a Mahayana story, but a monk lives by a village, and all the people in the village respect him. But one day, this girl gets pregnant, and she won't tell her parents who the father is, and finally she breaks down and says, "No, well, it's that monk." And they believe her, and all the townspeople go there, because this is a simple little village, and they go there and they criticize him and tell him he's a terrible monk, and how could he do this? And they say, "Oh, you terrible monk." And what does this monk say? He says, "Ah, so." And so they say, "We're going to bring you the child after he's born, and you're going to take care of it because it's your responsibility." And he just says, "Ah, so." So this happens. They bring him the child after it's born, and he takes it and says, "Ah, so." And he does bring it up for 2-3 years. And then finally the girl tells the truth. And then all the people go, and they're all with a lot of consternation, and they're very contrite, and they say, "Oh, well, we're so sorry. You're such a wonderful man. You took care of this child so well. How can you ever forgive us? Give us. And he says, "Ah, so." And they say, "But we'd like to have the child back." "We'd like to have the child back, please." And so he gives them the child and says, "Ah, so." and they take the child and as they walk away, he says, you can guess what he says. He says, ah, so, and closes the door, and that's the end of the story. So I guess I should leave. Right? That's the end of my... except if anybody really has a question that's really... they need to have answered.
They can come back next
time. What does aso mean?
Oh, aso? It's just some kind of
whatever
Chinese phrase that means, you know, whatever. He says, well, that's the way it is. Equanimity. That's the way it is. That's the way it is.